Blog Talk Radio.
For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter, @GoForAgain. And while you're there on Twitter, give me a follow @GoForAgain. Big show lined up for you today. Expected to be joined by Phoenix Suns guard Shannon Brown. Shannon Brown has a beautiful, great music festival lined up here in August. Great lineup, and we're going to talk to him about that. And also we're going to talk to him. I mean, his Suns have been busy in this free agent market. You got Steve Nash going to the Lakers, and you got Eric Gordon getting signed by the Suns. Goran Dragic getting signed by the Suns. You got Michael Beasley being signed by the Suns. So the Suns have been very busy. But we're going to talk to Shannon about his Woodstar Music Festival, which is coming to you in August 17th through the 19th, and that will be in Chicago. So we're going to talk to Shannon Brown about that. We're also going to talk to PGA golfer Rodney Green. And we're going to bring Rodney in, talk to him about Rodney Green Golf. I mean, he's trained a lot of celebrities, done a lot of great things in the sport of golf. And we're going to talk to him a little bit about Tiger, talk to him a little about some of the things that he has going on. So we're going to talk to Shannon Brown and Rodney Green here today. But I want to start now in the NBA. Free agency has been crazy. It has been absolutely crazy. And from last Sunday when it all got started till now, we've heard and seen all types of crazy things going on in the National Basketball Association. I mean, this has been a great time in terms of free agency. This has been one of the better years. I mean, the talk was, where does Deron Williams go? Well, we find out. Deron Williams was one of the biggest names out there. We find out Deron Williams decides to stick with the Brooklyn Nets. Excuse me. And then we want to figure out, okay, the Nets did also make a splash and bring in Joe Johnson. And then we hear Dwight Howard specifically tell everybody that he wants to go to the Brooklyn Nets. And there was talk that a possible deal could be done. At one point you heard, okay, no shot after bringing in Joe Johnson. That absorbed all Brooklyn's cap, and they weren't able to make any kind of maneuvers to get Dwight Howard. Then we hear the next day, 2 days later possibly, that now there is an opportunity for the Nets to get Dwight Howard, and there was talk of a sudden trade. You heard Brooke Lopez, you heard Chris Humphreys, you heard Marshawn Brooks, you heard draft picks as well. And then I'm saying to myself, if I'm the Orlando Magic, first of all, you got to sign these guys. These guys are free agents. So you wonder what type of deals you would have to sign these guys to, and does that really hamstring you moving forward? To me, and looking at that, if I'm the Magic, I don't deal with the Nets unless I really, really have to, unless I can't find anything. Because the thing about it, I think you want to kind of break this whole thing down. You can't build around a Brooke Lopez. Brooke Lopez is not that guy. Chris Humphreys is not that guy. Marshawn Brooks showed promise, but again, he's not that guy. You want to try to break this thing down to get as many assets as possible. You want to break this thing down. Dwight Howard, it is what it is. I mean, and Dwight Howard, first, you know, he one day he wants to be in the Magic. Well, not necessarily with the Magic, but he wants to sign an option, say, okay, you know, I'm going to be here for another year. Next 1 year, he wants to be traded. Next time, he's not sure. So on and so forth. The thing about this whole thing with Dwight Howard, and granted, I mean, the way this whole thing has been handled has been bad. But the thing about it is, he is young. And when you're young, it is hard sometimes to make decisions. And it's hard to make the right decisions. And the thing about Dwight is, and I think what's gotten a lot of people upset about Dwight, is he's been going this way and that way. He's been swaying back and forth. Some days I want to do this, some days I want to do that. And I think what people want, and I think what the Magic want, and what everybody wants is a decision. Make a decision. What do you want? What do you want? I mean, do you want to stay in Orlando? Obviously, you don't. And if that was the case, why would you sign that one-year deal? Well, not the one-year deal, but why would you re-up with the Magic and say, you know what, I'm not gonna opt out. I'm gonna stay for one more year. Why would you do that? Doesn't make sense. Why would you do that, Dwight? That's not smart. You should have went out on the open market, and the Nets possibly could have did something for you. And you could have went to Orlando. I mean, Orlando, not Orlando. You could have went to the Nets, possibly to the Mavericks. Who knows? Wherever you wanted to go, you could have picked and choose your situation. You can pick and choose. But now you said, you know what? Give me one more year with Orlando. And in doing so, you now hurt your situation. Now you may not be able to go to the Nets. You might have to go to Houston for a year. You may have to go to the Lakers. And granted, I mean, who knows? The thing about it, if you go to Houston, if you go to L.A., you go to Dallas, wherever you go, you may end up liking it and want to sign there. And look at the Nets are like, you know what? We can't continue to wait for this guy. We have to move on. And hear Darren Williams say it now. Darren Williams is saying one of the reasons he signed with the Nets, because he said he was close to signing with the Mavericks, but one of the reasons he decided to sign with the Nets was because of the acquisition of Joe Johnson. So that swayed him. That kept him in New Jersey. Not New Jersey. I keep saying New Jersey. It's kind of hard to get used to this Brooklyn thing. But that kept him in Brooklyn. And so the Nets had to do something. They took on those 4 years, $89 million. I look at the Nets right now, and I tweeted this the moment they got Joe Johnson. And I stated this: if you don't get Dwight Howard, you become basically the Atlanta Hawks. It's almost like the Atlanta Hawks and the Nets may have flip-flopped. The Hawks and the Nets may have flip-flopped here. I mean, you got the Hawks now, who basically gave Joe Johnson to the Nets for contracts. I mean, pretty much it was contracts. So, but the Hawks were in 4-5 land. They were the 4th or 5th seed in the Eastern Conference, nothing more, nothing less. They weren't going past that 4th or 5th seed. And that's just the way it was. They weren't going past that point. They were good enough to get to the second round and be competitive in the second round, even though they went out in the first round this year. So think about the Hawks and Danny Ferry, and I applaud him for what he is doing here. You have to do this. You had no choice but to break this thing down in Atlanta. You're not competing with Miami. You're not competing with Boston. And you're not even competing with the Bulls. So you're not competing with any of those teams. So you had no choice in a lot of ways but to break this thing down. And I like what they did in terms of breaking it down. I like what they did. And they're preparing themselves and they're setting themselves up to possibly make a run at Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard is from Atlanta. He does have a relationship with Josh Smith. So you have an opportunity to possibly put your name there. You can put your name there. Who knows? Chris Paul has not resigned with the Clippers yet. So, again, you have an opportunity who knows, possibly at Chris Paul. And you look at Orlando, I mean, the package of, there was talk of Atlanta offering a package of Horford and Jeff Teague. I mean, I would think that would be better than what the Nets were offering. I think that would be better than that. But we'll see what happens with the whole situation with Dwight Howard and everything. I mean, it's a situation I think a lot of us are tired of hearing. But we'll have to see how this thing plays out. But I want to look at now the news that came down yesterday, and that was Ray Allen. Judas Shuttlesworth is what he's being called now by some of the faithful in Boston. Judas Shuttlesworth. That's funny. But you look at it, Ray Allen has decided to go with the Miami Heat. And I talked about this last week. To me, this move was about this. If you're Boston, I think you can replace Ray Allen. You got Avery Bradley there who's gave you some great minutes. You got Jason Terry that you brought in. You also bring it back a Jeff Green. So I think you can replace Ray Allen. That's not the problem to me. The problem becomes is where Ray Allen went. He went to the Miami Heat. In Miami now, he has an opportunity to win another title. He took less money to go to Miami. He took less money to go to the Heat. Less money. So, obviously, he really wanted to be there. But with Ray Allen now in the mix, to go along with what you already have with the big three, could you imagine how many open three-point looks Ray Allen will get? Could you imagine? Can you imagine how it is going to be to guard this Heat team? It's going. It's hard right now. It's hard enough to guard this team right now. But could you imagine having to guard them now with Ray Allen in the mix? Can you imagine? With Ray Allen in the mix now. I mean, it's a tough proposition for anybody to deal with right now. This is a tough proposition for anybody to deal with right now because if you look at it now, this may have, I mean, Stephen A. Smith said this, the Heat will win, if they bring him right out, they will win two championships. Book it, guarantee it. He guaranteed that they will win two titles with Ray Allen. Guaranteed two titles. I'm not ready to go that far, but I will say this. The Miami Heat are in a great situation with Ray Allen. A great, great situation. And the thing about Miami, I think they're going to be, continue to be in this position where because you have LeBron, D-Wade, and Bosh, because you have three superstars, they're going to be always be in that position where they're going to be able to get that veteran that's still looking to win, that veteran that still has game. They're going to continue to still and continue to still get those type of guys. They're going to continue to get those type of guys moving forward because those two make the game so – those three, excuse me, make the game so easy for everybody else. I mean, you have superstars and Bron and then D-Wade. They make the game easy. They make the game easy. They make the game easy for everybody. They make the game easy. And so you're going to see this. I think you're going to see this for the next few years. Veteran players who still got game left going to Miami. You're going to continue to see that. You're going to continue to see that. Moving forward, you're going to see that. And it's almost like, you know what now? Yes, I think Boston is still a formidable team. But Miami is even more formidable. Miami is with Ray Allen in the mix now. You have to guard Ray Allen. You have to guard Ray Allen. He has to be guarded. And Ray Allen's still a very good two guard in this league. He still gets it done. He still has that sweet stroke. And he wasn't right this year with his ankle. If he's right, oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. What may happen moving forward with the Miami Heat? I mean, the Bulls, they're uncertain. The Bulls are uncertain. Derrick Rose, we don't know what's going to happen in terms of his ACL and his effectiveness in 2012. The next season, we don't know how effective he'll be. You have the Bulls, Celtics. I think the Celtics, I mean, they're a year older, I should say. Pierce is a year older. Garnett's a year older. But they're a team that I think is going to be there, but can they really challenge the Heat? I mean, they took them 7 games this year, but now the Heat have Ray Allen. Now they have a healthy Chris Bosh. So can you count on the Celtics, really? And then you have, the key is Dwight Howard. What happens with Dwight Howard? Where does Dwight Howard go? If he goes to Brooklyn, then the Nets are a team that can compete with the Miami Heat. You mean Darren Williams, Gerald Wallace, Joe Johnson. I mean, so you have the backcourt, you have some wing players, and you have a beast in Dwight Howard if you get him. The Nets can compete with this. The Knicks, they can't compete with this. The Knicks can't compete with this. So the thing about it is that you look at the Indiana Pacers, a team that possibly will lose Roy Hibbert, but a team that is young and has some talent, but can they compete with the Heat? With a healthy Chris Bosh and a healthy everybody and a healthy Ray Allen, can they compete? No, probably not. So I guess what I'm getting at here, is that the Miami Heat, by this move, may have distanced themselves once again. They may have distanced themselves once again from everybody else in the Eastern Conference. And Boston, this is a move, again, they can replace Ray Allen, I believe. But the thing that they cannot replace, they can replace Ray Allen, they can do all that. But the thing about it is where Ray Allen went. I think if you were Boston, you would have been happy with Ray Allen going to the Clippers. The Clippers were in talks. Well, going to be in talks with Ray Allen, but they decided to go in a different direction, bringing in Jamal Crawford, which I think is a great, great move for them. I mean, Jamal Crawford is a great, great addition for the Los Angeles Clippers, a guy who can fill it up. He can fill it up. Jamal Crawford's a great move for the Clippers, a great move for the Los Angeles Clippers. Bringing in Jamal Crawford was a good move. He can fill it up. He can fill it up. And he's a guy who can score in bunches. You need a Jamal Crawford's a great move for the Los Angeles Clippers. A great move for the Los Angeles Clippers. A great move. And then they bring back Mr. Big Shot. They get Mr. Big Shot back, Chauncey Billups. He's now back. Billups is back. If he's healthy, coming off an Achilles injury, the Clippers are a team that you really, truly have to look out for in the Western Conference. I mean, Lamar Odom, his versatility to go along with Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, can't even talk. DeAndre Jordan, Lamar Odom, Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, Jamal Crawford, Chauncey Billups. I mean, there is some talent, Bledsoe. There is some talent there with the Los Angeles Clippers. They're a team that now makes the Western Conference a little more interesting. They make the Western Conference a little more interesting. Adding the pieces that they added, the Western Conference becomes a little more interesting. I mean, you added some decent, decent pieces there. Lamar Odom, if he can get right and get back to that sixth man of the year form that he had a couple seasons ago, look out. Look out. Look out for the Clippers. I mean, they have really, really, really positioned themselves very, very well moving forward. They really have. They have positioned themselves very well moving forward. And you still have Caron Butler on that roster. I mean, there's some pieces there. This is a very versatile Clippers team. I mean, if Chris Paul, if he can get himself healthy, and he never really was completely healthy this year, if he's healthy and Blake continues to add pieces to his game, to go along with Lamar Odom, if he's right, Jamal Crawford, who can score in any building at any period at any time, anywhere, Chauncey Billups, Mr. Big Shot. I mean, if you still have those pieces with the decent size that they have, the Clippers are a team that you have to look out for. Don't sleep on this Los Angeles Clippers team. And I looked at the West last year, and now you still have OKC, of course. You have San Antonio, who I think still will be formidable. You still have the Dallas Mavericks are a team that took a hit. We're going to get to them in a moment now. We're going to get to them. But they took a hit. But the Lakers, obviously with Steve Nash, they're a team now you have to watch out for. Steve Nash with the Los Angeles Lakers. You got to watch out for them now. That makes them a better basketball team. They still have Bynum. They still have Gasol. They still have talent on that roster. So you now have to look out for the Lakers. Once more again. So the Western Conference is still going to be tough. And you look at it now, it's almost like you have the Lakers, an old-school team, and the Celtics, an old-school team, older team. Both of those teams are shooting for the young guns, which is the Miami Heat in the East and OKC in the West. Both of those teams are still shooting for both of those teams are going after the young guns in Miami and the young guns in OKC. So it's gotten very interesting. And depending on where Dwight Howard goes, it could get a little more interesting. It could get even more interesting, depending on where Dwight goes. And that should be interesting to see where he goes. And we may not find out this offseason. It could be a situation we may find out during the season. I'm the Magic. I want to try to get this over and done with before the start of the season. But it may not be possible. It may not be possible. But at the same time, you don't want to rush it. You don't want to rush it because you want to get the best possible deal that you can get. You want to be able to use this chip, this asset, to position yourself moving forward. That's what you want to do. You want to be able to do that. And let's go to Steve Nash right now. The Lakers dealt with the Suns, sign and trade Steve Nash. Goes to the Lakers. They give up a couple first-rounders and a couple second-rounders. And the Lakers they're in win-now mode. Kobe's getting older. Gasol's getting older. They're in win-now mode. And does this help them win now? I think it puts them in a great position. I mean, they competed against OKC. They didn't get blown out. It was a five-game series, but it was a close, very close five-game series. I mean, the Lakers gave away game two. They had game two, and they also gave away game four. So they gave away some games there. The series could have been easily the Lakers winning it in six. So the Lakers gave some games away, but now one of the holes that the Lakers had last year was at the point guard spot. They tried to bring in Ramon Sessions, and he played well. He was decent for them, but he's no Steve Nash. He's no Steve Nash. Sessions is a better defender than Steve Nash, but he is not the point guard that Steve Nash is. He's not the caliber point guard that Steve Nash is. He's not the playmaker. He doesn't have the playmaking ability, the shooting ability, just the all-around game that Steve Nash has. Ramon Sessions does not have that. So that's an upgrade. Derek Fisher didn't have that. That's an upgrade. And you look at it, some are question whether or not Kobe Bryant will be willing to give the ball up, if you will, to Steve Nash. Steve Nash, Kobe Bryant, both guys very effective with the ball. But you look at Kobe Bryant, the past couple of years, he's been looking for that point guard. I mean, he was pretty close to having Chris Paul. So he's obviously open to that idea. He's open to that. And Steve Nash can get the ball to Kobe Bryant in places that he'll love. I mean, we can get the ball to him in great places. And imagine now the bigs, Gasol and Andrew Bynum. He can put them, get the ball to them in positions that they like. So it's a win-win situation as far as I'm concerned. You lose a little bit on the defensive end, but the thing about it is with these new rules in the NBA, it's hard to defend Russell Westbrook anyway. It's going to be hard to defend Russell Westbrook with a solid defender because these new rules now where hands off, it's harder to defend these guys. It's harder to defend these speed guys. It's going to be harder to defend Chris Paul anyway. You're going to have a hard time defending him anyway. I mean, you're going to have a hard time defending Russell Westbrook anyway, Rajon Rondo anyway, Derrick Rose anyway. You're going to have a hard time defending those guys anyway. So the point I'm trying to make is, yes, they may lose a little bit on the defensive end, but guess what? What they lose there, they gain so much more on the offensive side of basketball, and they still have big men who can block shots, and they still have Andrew Bynum who can block shots, Metal World Peace who can still defend. Maybe he can't defend the way he used to, but he still can defend. Kobe Bryant can still get after guys. So they still can defend. And so the point I'm trying to make is, yes, you lose a little bit on the defense, but the thing about it is you gain so much more on the offense side of the ball, and I think this is a great move for the Los Angeles Lakers. They're going for it. They're going for it. They are going for it. They're going for it now. And like I said, Kobe's older. Gasol's older. So these guys are getting up there. Their window of opportunity is closing. The window is closing. So it's time to do what you can do to be successful at this point. It's time for the Lakers to do that. I applaud this deal. The only thing you gave up is draft picks, and that exception that you got when you traded Lamar Odom came in handy here. The only thing you're giving up is draft picks. If that's it, you're not giving up any pieces of your ball club. And the way the Lakers were, how late were those draft picks going to be anyway? I mean, even without Steve Nash, this is still a very good basketball team, even without Steve Nash. So they're going to be picking, they're going to pick in the 20s anyway, regardless. So this is a great move for the Lakers. And with the Suns, you know, at this point, I mean, Steve Nash, it didn't really make sense to try to bring Steve Nash back. In terms of you being a title contender, you weren't that. You're not that. You're an eighth seed at the best, eighth or seventh seed at the best. You're a lower playoff seed if at best. So the thing about it is I think this is a great move for you. You do get the picks. There's some assets there in those picks and see what you can do there. But now you're rebuilding essentially. And you have an opportunity now. You move Steve Nash on. You move him on to the Lakers. And Nash wanted to stay close to his family in Arizona. The Suns helped him out there by moving him to the Lakers. There was talk that Steve Nash could go to the New York Knicks. And ultimately, that didn't work out. And Nash eventually decided. And the Lakers and the Suns came together. And Nash is ultimately a Los Angeles Laker now. And let's go to the Knicks now with Jeremy Lin. Jeremy Lin signed an offer sheet with the Houston Rockets. He signed an offer sheet with the Houston Rockets. And so what happens now? The Knicks have an opportunity to match. Reports are the Knicks will match. And I think the Knicks would be foolish not to match. They would be foolish not to match this deal. And the reports are 4 years, $28 million for Jeremy Lin. And the thing about it is, the Rockets had these guys. Had this boy, I should say. They had Jeremy Lin. The Rockets had him. They had this guy. And they let him go, ultimately. But in Houston at the time, they were point guard heavy. They had Dragic. They had Kyle Lowry. They were point guard heavy. So you can understand why they did what they did with Jeremy Lin. But it could ultimately be worth $30 million. A source told Mark Stein of ESPN that they will match any offer on land up to $1 billion. So that tells you all you need to know about this situation. Jeremy Lin is returning to the New York Knicks. He will be re-signed by the New York Knicks. And think about it. If you're a Houston Rockets, this is a great move for you, not only possibly on the court, but more so off the court. If Jeremy Lin and Lin Sanity, you can bring that Lin Sanity to Houston. The buzz that Lin Sanity was in New York City was crazy. It was a crazy, crazy buzz. Everybody was coming out. Everybody was talking about it. Everybody was buying jerseys. Everybody was buying T-shirts. I mean, everybody was loving Jeremy Lin. I mean, everybody was loving him. Loving him. And, you know, they loved that aspect of him. His Asian descent. I mean, that to me was that was a big part of the appeal of Jeremy Lin. And think about it, people love that. To me, if Jeremy Lin is average, you know, he's still young. He's still learning the position. I know Larry Brown, the great Larry Brown, he knows a lot about point guards. And when Larry Brown speaks about point guards, usually you have to listen. And he said he believes Jeremy Lin's a backup point guard in his league. If that's possible. That could be very true. That could be very true. We saw what the Miami Heat did to him. The Miami Heat punked him. They punked him in that particular game. They treated him like a little kid. He couldn't get the ball past half court. He couldn't get the ball off the court. They punked Jeremy Lin. But the point is, he may be that guy, or he could be that guy where the 38 points against the Lakers, the game winner against the Toronto Raptors, the game against the Mavericks where he dominated. He carried the Knicks team. The Knicks don't even sniff the playoffs. They don't sniff the playoffs if Lin Sanity does not happen. Lin Sanity changed the course of the season for the New York Knickerbockers. He changed the course of the season. Lin Sanity changed the course of the season for the New York Knicks. The New York Knicks do not sniff the playoffs without Lin Sanity. They just don't. They just don't. So, I think this is I think if some would say that Lin is being overpaid, and we're basing that off this 10-game sample that we saw with this guy. But the thing about it is, and that, yes, the Knicks possibly could be overpaying for a backup point guard. But Jeremy Lin could be a little more than that. He may be even a little more than that. And we don't know. There's still a lot of uncertainty. But I will say this. If he turns out to be the Jeremy Lin that we saw against the Lakers, against the Mavericks, against the Raptors when he hit that game winner, if he turns out to be that guy, then guess what? He's a bargain at that point. He becomes a bargain. And he becomes a bargain for what he does on the court, if he turns out to be much better, and it becomes a bargain for what he brings off the court. And what I mean by off the court, and that's the buzz that he brings. Jersey sales, T-shirts, and, you know, just the buzz around Madison Square Garden. And the Knicks in general. And to me, if you're the league, you'd love to have a Jeremy Lin in New York being great and causing all this Lin Sanity. Now, you could say that it is Lin Sane for the New York Knicks, or the Houston Rockets, I should say, because they're the one who signed them to the offer sheet. You could say it's crazy for the Rockets to do it. You could say it's even more crazy, it's crazier for the Knicks to match the deal. But I'm telling you, what he brings off the court, possibly, and what he could bring on the court, I think is worth the investment. I think this is a good move by the Knicks. They're going to match it, ultimately. I would be shocked if they don't match this deal. I would be shocked, absolutely shocked if they don't match this deal. Stunned, actually. I'd be stunned if they don't match this deal. And I think they have to do it. They have to do it. You have to match this deal. You have to. And the Knicks did bring in Jason Kidd, 3-year deal for him. And, I mean, Jason Kidd didn't show us a lot last year, seemed to be on the downside of his career. But he is. I mean, they wanted Nash. They didn't get Nash. So he's the best possible replacement, I think, at this point, if you're the Knicks. And who knows, coming to New York may revitalize him. Who knows? I mean, he had a lot of success in New Jersey. Maybe the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area may revitalize Jason Kidd, and he can return to his old self. I'm not saying he's going to return to his old self because he's not that guy no more. But Jason Kidd's still a good point guard. His numbers were down last year. The injuries have been a problem for him as well. But I think again, he's probably the best option you have for the New York Knicks. Bring him in, bring in the Jeremy Lin, re-signing him. You can have Jason Kidd mentor Jeremy Lin. And he did say Jason Kidd, one of the appeals of New York was the opportunity to mentor Jeremy Lin. So it's a good move for Jason Kidd, and I think it's a decent move for the Knicks. I mean, again, Jason Kidd is not the Jason Kidd we all know and love, but he's not bad either. He's not bad either. So, good move for the Knicks, getting the guy. Not necessarily that they wanted per se. You thought that maybe Jason Kidd was going to go back to the Dallas Mavericks, and all reports were that he was close to going back to the Mavericks, but he decided to go to the Knicks. And so we'll see what happens there with Jason Kidd and Jeremy Lin. But Jeremy Lin probably will be signed by the Knicks. They will match the offer. And again, we would all be shocked. We would be shocked, amazed, and dazed, and stunned if the Knicks do not match this deal. And speaking of another deal that surprised a lot of people, the Portland Trail Blazers gave Roy Hibbert a max deal, 4 years, $58 million. 4 years, $58 million, a max offer for Roy Hibbert. He was good this year, but is he that good? Is he max offer good? I don't think so. I'm not even sure. I mean, this year, 12 points per game, 8 boards a game for him. It was a career high for him. I don't know if he's any more than that. Maybe a couple more rebounds. But in terms of scoring, I don't know if he's going to be any more than that. He is of a dying breed, and so that helps him. There's not too many true centers in this league anymore. You got Dwight Howard's one of the last of the dying breeds, and Andrew Bynum. Not too many centers, traditional centers, in this league anymore. Roy Hibbert is one of those traditional centers. Is this a lot of money for Roy Hibbert? Yes. Do you match this if you're the Pacers? I would say probably not. And I know they've been talking to Chris Kaman. Chris Kaman's not a bad center in this league. Chris Kaman is a decent center in this league. The thing about Chris Kaman you have to worry about is injuries. You have to worry about injuries with Chris Kaman. He's a guy that has a hard time staying healthy. But if he's healthy, Chris Kaman can do some things. And so he can definitely do some things on the offensive end. I mean, you look at Chris Kaman over the years. Let's go to 2007, 2008 for this guy. Averaged 12 boards a game, 15 points a game, 15 and 12 for Chris Kaman. Then you go 2009, 2010, you're talking about 18 and 9 for Chris Kaman. And last year for the New Orleans Hornets, 13 and 7 for Chris Kaman. So Chris Kaman, to me, is not a bad replacement. Oh, by the way, 1.6 blocks per game for Chris Kaman. Chris Kaman is not a bad replacement. It is a cheaper alternative. And on the offensive end, you could argue that he's better than Roy Hibbert. you could argue that he's a better offensive player than Roy Hibbert in terms of his post moves and everything. Not only can you make an argument, but I think it's a legitimate argument. He is a better, I think he, at this point in their careers, he is a better offensive player than Roy Hibbert. So to me, bringing in Chris Kamen would be an ideal replacement for Roy Hibbert. He would be the ideal replacement for Roy Hibbert. So I, if I'm the Indiana Pacers, smaller market Indiana Pacers, I don't think I match this deal. I can't match a max offer for Roy Hibbert. I can't do that. I can't do that. It does, but does he make Indiana a team that's difficult for the Miami Heat? He can do that, yes. But Chris Kamen possibly can do the same if he's healthy. He can possibly do the same if he's healthy. But in terms of max money, obviously, Roy Hibbert is not worth max money. He's not. He's not worth a max deal. He's just not. He's not that guy. He's just not. He's not that guy. But I will say this. I think he's a very good center. I think he can be and will continue to progress into a decent center in this league. He was an all-star this year. But I will say this. I don't think he is. I just don't think he is. He's not worth max money. He is a little limited in terms of athleticism, not the most athletic big man in this league. So, I mean, I don't know. He's not worth max money, and I think that's the bottom line. He's not a max guy. He's just not a max guy. And if I'm the Pacers, I look at the alternatives. An alternative, a very good alternative, maybe Chris Kamen. Maybe Chris Kamen. I don't think you can give Roy Hibbert max money. He's not max money. But the thing about it is, seven-footers don't grow on trees. And so you're going to get paid if you're a seven-footer with some skills. You're going to get paid. You're going to get paid. And so Roy Hibbert is getting his payday. He's getting his payday. He's getting his payday. We'll see. But I think Chris Kamen would be a decent replacement for Roy Hibbert. Cheaper. And a guy who may give you more on the offensive side, even in terms of rebounds. I mean, Chris Kamen was a double-double guy in this league. He was a double-double guy in this league. So the way I look at it is, with Chris Kamen and his skill set on the offensive end, he can shoot with both hands in terms of jump hooks. He's got okay range, great moves in the post, got some athleticism, and he can rebound the basketball. And he can block some shots. So to me, Chris Kamen is not a bad alternative to Roy Hibbert. Kamen's older than Hibbert. But again, I think this is about, you know, obviously in a perfect world, if you're the Pacers, you want to bring back Roy Hibbert. But in terms, and we're talking financially now, in terms of finances, to me, if you're the Indiana Pacers, you cannot make that move. You cannot give Roy Hibbert max money. You can't. You can't do it. You can't do it. You cannot do that. It just would not be wise, in my opinion. It just won't be. You would be making a mistake. You would be making a huge mistake, I think, in giving Roy Hibbert max money. Max money. He's not that guy. He's not max guy. He's not a max guy. He's not. So you can't give him that. I don't think. I know Danny Granger's making good money. Paul George, eventually, you got to take care of him. He just seems to be a player on the rise. So it's going to be a tough decision, obviously, for the Indiana Pacers. It's going to be a very difficult decision for those boys. But to me, I think the right decision, you're going to have to pass here on Roy Hibbert. You're going to have to pass. You wonder how Hibbert will be. We'll see. In Portland, in the Western Conference. And how much of a difference that will make. We'll see. We shall see. But again, Indiana, don't make the mistake of matching this deal. It would be just that, a mistake. Don't do it to yourselves. Do not do it to yourselves. Don't do it. And looking at it now, the first week of free agency is done. Again, players cannot sign deals until July 11th. They cannot sign deals until July 11th, so that's a few days away. That's actually Thursday. No, that's Wednesday, excuse me, July 11th. So we'll see what goes down and what really happens, but it's a lot of interesting and compelling things that still need to happen in terms of Dwight Howard. Where does he go? And wherever Dwight Howard goes, it's going to change something. It's going to sway the balance of power wherever he goes. I'm almost interested, and I almost want him to go to Brooklyn now with to see how they match up against the big three in Miami. I almost want to see that happen now. I know at one point I didn't really want to see him go to Brooklyn, but now I'm interested to see what he will be in Brooklyn and how they will stack up against the Miami Heat. I mean, because the thing about it is, one thing the Heat don't have is an imposing and a solid big man. They don't have that. So Dwight Howard would give the Nets an advantage there. And then in terms of Darren Williams, he's going to be a tough guard for Chalmers or D-Wade, whoever they put on him. They're probably going to have to put Chalmers on him because they have Joe Johnson now, and you would think D-Wade would go there. Or possibly LeBron goes there. I mean, they can mix and match it any way you choose, but you still have Jared Wallace to contend with. You still have Jared Wallace to contend with. He's no slouch. So the thing about it, this would make a very interesting matchup with these two teams if Dwight Howard goes to Brooklyn. And you would say at that point that the Nets become a team that can compete with the Heat. You would say to this point that the Heat are not a shoo-in. And I'm still not ready to say they're a shoo-in because injuries are a thing that can always – injuries are the ultimate equalizer at times. I mean, they are the ultimate equalizer at times. They really are. And so you saw what happened with the Miami Heat when Chris Bosh went down. They became a different team when Chris Bosh went down. When Chris Bosh went down, they became a different team. And a team that was very vulnerable. They were very vulnerable. And a team that struggled with the Indiana Pacers and the Boston Celtics without Chris Bosh. So they became very vulnerable when Chris Bosh was on the sideline. So injuries are the ultimate equalizer. They are the ultimate equalizer. And one of the things with the Miami Heat, because of this big three, they don't have the depth the other teams may have. Because most of your money is spent on LeBron, Wade, and Bosh, you don't have the necessary cap space to bring anybody else in. Very fortunate that Ray Allen took less money to go there. But the point I'm trying to make here is, if Dwight Howard goes to Brooklyn now, it's going to be trouble. It's going to be trouble for the Miami Heat. And I'm not saying the Heat won't be able to beat the New Jersey Brooklyn Nets. They are Brooklyn now. I don't think, I'm not saying that the Miami Heat wouldn't be able to beat Brooklyn. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is it makes a very compelling series, especially with Gerald Wallace now and Joe Johnson and Darren Williams and possibly Dwight Howard. I mean, the Miami Heat would have a hard time guarding that. LeBron James can't guard Dwight Howard. He can guard a lot of people, but he can't guard Dwight Howard. So somebody's going to have to do that. Joel Anthony, possibly. That Eddie Curry, it's pretty much seemed like Eddie Curry was on the sideline most of the year, and they were just getting him right, getting him back in shape, and rounding him into shape. So you didn't see much of him this year. I don't think Eddie Curry's that guy, especially on the defensive end. Eddie Curry's not that guy. If Eddie Curry can get himself right on the offensive end, I mean, he could give Dwight Howard some problems. But we'll see about that. We'll see if Eddie Curry does get right. And that's a large leap to say that Eddie Curry gets right. That's a very large leap to make that and say Eddie Curry gets right. Because who knows? But I will say this. In terms of Dwight Howard, wherever he goes, we shall see how it's going to change the balance of power. I don't see him spending the whole year in Orlando. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's possible. It's possible, obviously, but I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think Orlando would want to deal with that distraction for a whole another year. I don't think so. The only reason they dealt with it last year, big reason is they had the All-Star game in Orlando. And so they wanted Dwight Howard to be there. Plus, they had thought they had a shot possibly of convincing him to stay. And who knows, judging by the way he flip-flops, it was a good gamble on their part. But, I mean, theoretically, you could argue that he got Stan Van and Otis Smith fired. You can make that argument. He moved them on, and now he doesn't want to be a part of it anymore. He does not want to be a part of the organization anymore. The question is, why did you even opt in for another year if you didn't really want to be in Orlando? There was talk, he was talking about he may have been blackmailed, so on and so forth. I mean, why would you want to be in Orlando for another year if you really don't want to be there? Don't be a place that you really don't want to be. That doesn't make sense. That's not wise. That's not smart. That's quite stupid, actually. So, that was a mistake on his part. That was a big mistake on his part. And I think he knows that now. And the Nets weren't happy when that happened because they had positioned themselves to make a run at Dwight Howard. They had positioned themselves. And speaking of a team that positions themselves to make a run at free agents, how about the Dallas Mavericks? I mean, they have all this cap room, and they struck out on Darren Williams. And they couldn't even bring back Jason Kidd. So you look at the Mavericks last year, they basically decided, you know what, instead of trying to bring everybody back, we're going to try to shoot and try to get Darren Williams next summer. We're going to try to get Darren Williams. And they did that. That's what they did. In the process of doing that, they gave away Tyson Chandler. They didn't bring him back. Deshaun Stevenson, J.J. Barea. You're talking about key components, key pieces of that championship team. They were a big part of that championship run, those guys. Those guys were a big part of that run. Stevenson, Barea, Tyson Chandler, those guys were a big reason the Mavericks won the title in 2011. Mark Cuban and the Mavericks decide, you know what? We think we can, let's move on from those guys and let's try to position ourselves to get the hometown boy, Darren Williams. Let's try to get the homeboy, Darren Williams, thinking he would go to Dallas. And Darren Williams said he was close. I talked about it earlier. He said he was close. But the thing about it is you didn't get the job done. So not only you lose Darren Williams, you didn't get Steve Nash, you don't get Jason Kidd. So now you're looking at Ramon Sessions at this point. Dirk Nowitzki's getting older. this team, Dallas, I mean, you were thinking of the possibilities of Darren Williams. The possibilities were endless for this Mavericks team. Now, you miss out on Darren Williams. You don't get Steve Nash. And you're a team right now that's not looking very good. You're not looking very good. You positioned yourself, capitalized to make runs at these guys, and it doesn't work out. And that's always the gamble when you do that. It's always a gamble when you try to position yourself to get certain players. It's always a gamble when you make that decision. And they made that decision, and it backfired on them. Such is life. You're listening to Go For It on Block Talk Radio. And we're back. We're going to be joined any moment now by Suns guard Shannon Brown, and he's got a lot of great things going on. He's got his Woodstar Music Festival in Chicago in August, and it's a star-studded affair. I mean, a lot of great names out there that's going to attend that music festival in Chicago, and should be exciting times. Should be great times, actually. Should be some great times in Chicago. Great times. And Shannon's bringing some great things to us with his Woodstar Music Festival. Bringing some great things. There, I mean, it's just the list of names that are going to be there. It's just, you're talking MC Light, you're talking his wife Monica, you're talking Robin Thicke. You're talking a lot of great, great performers there. A lot of great, great performers will be there at the Woodstar Music Festival. So we're going to be joined by Shannon Brown shortly, and we're going to talk to him about that music festival. I'm talking to him about some of the ongoings of this offseason, some of the things that's happened with his sons, and what may happen moving forward. So we're going to talk to him about that. And so we look at the Mavericks, and I was talking about the Mavericks, and in some respect, they blew it. They didn't really give that team who won it in 2011 a really good opportunity. They didn't give them an opportunity to repeat. They didn't give them an opportunity to defend their title. They didn't have that opportunity. They did not have that opportunity. I mean, you look at it. Tyson Chandler left, Barea, Stevenson. I mean, these guys were glue guys, big guys, and important guys. And one of the reasons the Mavericks won their title. So now you're missing out on those guys. Those guys are gone. And you don't get Darren Williams, you don't get Nash, you don't get Jason Kidd, you don't bring him back, and you lose Jason Terry as well. So what are the Mavericks going to be in 2012? What are they going to be? What are they going to be? I'm wondering what they're going to be. I'm wondering what they're going to be. I really am wondering what they're going to be. I'm wondering what they're going to be. I really wonder what they're going to be. They're going to struggle this year. They're going to struggle. Unless with that cash space, they can make some kind of moves. They're going to struggle. They really are. I mean, you missed out on everything. And everybody that you wanted, that you targeted. And if you brought a Darren Williams to Dallas, that would have changed things in Dallas. That obviously would have changed things, and they would have been a team that you would have had to look out for. They really would. That would have been a team that you would have to look out for. But again, they made the moves that they made. They went in a certain direction, and going in that direction, really, really has cost this team. But again, they thought they could get. Darren Williams. They thought they can get that guy. Now, they're still in the running for, you know, Dwight Howard, and they're still in that mix. But if you're Dwight Howard, do you go there? Would you want to go there? Would you want to go to Dallas? Now that they are what they are at this point, would you want to go to Dallas? And I think that's the question Dwight Howard is going to have to answer now. I don't think he does. I don't think I would. I mean, Dallas is really not positioned at this point to be a team where I'm saying, I got to go there. I got to go there. Dirk is older. Dirk is getting older. So he's not a young pup no more. He's not a young pup no more. I mean, Dirk is 34 now. He's 34. So how many good years does he have left? He's on the other side of things in terms of years. 2011 was his big year. His big year. But last year, he came back a little out of shape, and he was the Dirk of old. He wasn't the Dirk of old. And so, the Mavericks are an interesting team now. You have all that cap space, and you have no one to give it to. No one to give it to. All that cap space, and no one to give it to. The second hour, go for it. Starts now. Go for it. And in this hour, we're going to be joined by PGA professional Rodney Green. Going to talk to him about Tiger. Talk to him about some of the great things he has going on with Rodney Green's golf. And, you know, he's trained a lot of celebrities over the years and done a lot of great things in the sport of golf. So we're going to talk to him about those things. And we're still waiting on Shannon Brown. He should be joining us very shortly. And Shannon Brown's going to talk to us about his Woodstar Music Festival, which is coming up. Again, should be an exciting time in the great city of Chicago. Shannon has a lot of great things planned there, a lot of great acts, artists, and so a lot of great things going on there. And so we're going to bring Shannon Brown in and talk to him about that festival very shortly. And now, moving on now and going to the NFL, breaking news actually in the NFL. Adrian Peterson, the great running back for the Minnesota Vikings, was arrested last night in Houston for apparently resisting arrest. So this is a breaking story for Adrian Peterson and acting a fool, I guess, allegedly at this point in Houston. Acting a fool, and again, he was arrested for resisting arrest. We'll see how that story progresses. But I want to move to the NFL now, and I want to move to a big debate caused by former Giant Amani Toomer. He came out and he believed and stated that Eli Manning, and he talked about Eli Manning and Tony Romo, and he came out and said that Tony Romo was a better quarterback than Eli Manning. He believes that Tony Romo is a better quarterback than Eli Manning. That is his opinion. He talked about statistics and tried to back up his point, but I don't know how you can. And I see where he's going. I see where he's going when he makes his comments. But just judging by what we have seen over the past few years, judging by what we've seen the past few years, with Eli and with Tony Romo, I don't know how he can say it. I see how he can say it, but it just doesn't really make sense to me. And he's talking from purely you look at the numbers. I mean, let's look at the numbers. Toomer said he'd rather have Romo. He says Romo's better. I say Manning. But you look at the numbers, and you can see where he came up with this. You look at Manning. Let's compare these two now. You look at Tony Romo. Back in 2006, he started 10 games for the Cowboys, 19-13 in terms of touchdowns to interceptions. 2006, Manning, 24 touchdowns, 18 interceptions. Let's go to 2007 now. And that was the year where the Cowboys were the number one seed in the playoffs. And that was the year the Cowboys were 13-3. That was the year the Cowboys, many expected the Cowboys to break through and get to the Super Bowl. But in 2007, Romo, 4,200 yards, 64% completion percentage, 36 touchdowns, 19 interceptions. You look at Manning back in 2007, 23 touchdowns, 20 picks, he completed 56% of his passes, and threw for over 3,000 yards, 33-36 to be exact. Looking at that, looking at 2007, and I think the difference there in 2007, Tony Romo and his Cowboys losing the first round or divisional round against the New York Giants and Eli Manning. Statistically speaking, Tony Romo was much better. Tony Romo was much better in that 2007 year, but the difference is Eli Manning went through Dallas and went through Tampa that year and finally went through the Green Bay Packers, all on the road, and got to the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl. So Eli Manning won the Super Bowl in that particular year. Numbers favor Tony Romo. Completion percentage better, touchdowns better. All of those things point to Tony Romo. But at the end of the day, Eli was a champion. 2008. Let's look at 2008 now. Tony Romo, 34-48. Started 13 games for the Cowboys that year. 26 touchdowns, 14 picks, 61% completion percentage. Let's look at Eli Manning, 2008. 21 touchdowns, 10 picks, 32-38 in terms of yardage, 60% completion percentage. Numbers would favor Tony Romo. Numbers will probably favor Tony Romo. Not probably, they do. They favor Tony Romo. But guess what happened that particular year? That was the year that the Giants won the division, but they lost in the first round, the divisional round, I should say, to the Philadelphia Eagles. Lost to the Philadelphia Eagles in the divisional round in that year. So you look at it now, 2009, Tony Romo, big-time numbers in 2009. He finally gets his first playoff victory in that year, and he put up huge numbers in 2009, 26 touchdowns, only 9 interceptions, 63% completion percentage. You know what I mean in 2009? 62% completion percentage, 4,000 yards passing, 27 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. Close. Very close. Interceptions, Eli obviously has more, but it's close. That's close. That is close. Close. Tony Romo finally gets his first playoff victory that year against my beloved Philadelphia Eagles. But again, close. Numbers were close. Close numbers there. You look at now, 2010, Romo was injured throughout the course of that year, so let's not look at 2010. Look at last year. Let's look at, and actually 2010 is when Eli went crazy in terms of interceptions, 25 picks, a league high 25 picks that particular year. Eli in terms of interceptions is really, really up there. I mean, for Eli, you're looking at 72 interceptions over his career. That's Romo, 72 interceptions. Eli, 129 interceptions. 129 interceptions for Eli Manning. But I think the thing that separates Eli from Tony Romo is what Eli has done in terms of Super Bowls. He has two of them. Tony Romo does not have a playoff victory And granted, the quarterback is only one position in a football field, but again, it's the nature of the beast, the nature of the game. Quarterback gets too much credit, and the quarterback gets too much of the blame. So you look at Tony Romo, I mean Eli Manning last year, and what he did in clutch situations in the fourth quarter. And I think that's what makes that separates people, what it's done in the fourth quarter. That separates players. That separates players, what it's done in the fourth quarter. And what Eli Manning did in the fourth quarter was what last year was absolutely incredible. He was an absolute monster in the fourth quarter, a beast in the fourth quarter. A beast in the fourth quarter. An absolute beast. Eight of them last season for the Giants. Eight comebacks in the fourth quarter. You saw what he did in the Super Bowl when they needed the big drive. He gave it to them. He gave it to them. Anytime they needed to play in 2012, Eli Manning has given it to them. And then what he did in the fourth quarters was just he separated himself from Romo. And we saw some of the hiccups that Romo has had. And even last year against the Lions, where he threw three big interceptions, and the Lions ultimately came back and won that game. We talk about what we saw against the Jets earlier in the season, where he threw some bad interceptions in that game. Tony Romo, again, statistically speaking, you could argue talent-wise and so on and so forth, he's a better quarterback than Eli Manning. You could make that argument. But in terms of what we see, and just in terms of results, and you play this game, we're in the results business. You play this game as a quarterback to get the results to win games. In terms of winning football games, Eli Manning has done that. Two Super Bowls, two big Super Bowls for Eli Manning. I mean, and he's done it in different ways. He's won it in hostile environments. I mean, last year, the first year, obviously, he went through Tampa, went through Dallas, and went through Green Bay. You go back to this year, beat the Falcons at home. He had to beat them at the Meadowlands. But then he goes to Green Bay, beats Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, goes to San Francisco, a very good San Francisco team. He goes there. Was very fortunate that Kyle Williams dropped the ball a couple times, but he goes against San Francisco in San Francisco. He beats them there, and then he goes and beats Tom Brady for a second time. He beat Tom Brady for a second time. To me, that's what separates Eli from Tony. The fourth quarters, comebacks. I mean, Eli was just really, in the fourth quarter, he was just very, very good in the fourth quarter. He was off the charts in the fourth quarter. That's where you separate the two. That's where the separation comes. That's where the separation comes between Eli and Tony Romo. And so you look at those guys, you look at the comparison. As far as I'm concerned, it's a legitimate comparison. It's not an off-the-wall type of comparison. It's not far-fetched. But I think at this point, with the numbers and the Super Bowls that Eli has won, the two Super Bowls, I think, and his record in the playoffs, his ability to make the plays in the playoffs, not only did he win those Super Bowls, Eli Manning, and talking about Eli Manning, but he won MVPs in those Super Bowls. He was the MVP in those Super Bowls. So you could say he was the big reason why the Giants won those two Super Bowls. He was the big reason why the Giants won those two Super Bowls. So I think if you want to you look at this argument now, and being fair to both of them, I think you still have to favor Eli Manning. And I'm basing that largely on what happened this year. Because coming into the year, I know Manning said He was a top five quarterback. He was in that Brady, his brother's league. He was in that league, that Rodgers league, that Brady, that Aaron Rodgers, that Peyton Manning league. He was a part of that elite group. He was a part of that group. But I looked at it last year, and I was saying you could make an argument that Eli is the third best quarterback in his division. That's what I was looking at last year. But then, after what he did, he not only said it, but he backed it up. Michael Vick took a step back last year. Romo still put up decent numbers. But you look at the two games these two teams played, the Cowboys and the Giants, and Romo made some, again, that game, the first game where the Cowboys were in complete control, you can make an argument that the Cowboys should have won that particular ball game. Romo did everything in his power to win that game for him. But you look at that game, Eli made some plays in that fourth quarter, two big drives in that fourth quarter, and ultimately the Giants won that particular game. The Giants win that game, and ultimately that helped the Giants win the division and ultimately get into the playoffs. And then you look at the last game of the year at the Meadowlands, MetLife Stadium, I should say. Eli Manning topped Tony Romo again. He topped Tony Romo again. So you look at it, you look at those two situations, and you say to yourself, you have to go with Eli Manning. You have to go to Eli Manning in terms of who is the better quarterback. All things being equal, I still think because of what Eli did and has done in the fourth quarters, because of the two Super Bowls, you have to say Eli Manning is the better of the two quarterbacks. You have to. You have to say that Eli Manning is the better of the two quarterbacks. He is the better of the two. Is it close? Yeah, I think it's close. I definitely think it's close. But to me, the quarterback I would want, if I had to choose, and I'm basing a lot of it off of what happened last year, because even after what I saw, before what I saw last year with Eli Manning, I probably, going into 2012, I probably would have taken Tony Romo. And I said 2012, but it actually is 2011. Going into 2011, I would have taken Tony Romo over Eli Manning. I probably would have taken Tony over Eli. But what I saw last season from Eli Manning, he was on just an absolute another level. He was absolutely on another level. Absolutely on another level last year, especially in the fourth quarter. He was on another level. On another level. He was on another level, especially in the fourth quarter. So, again, if I had to make the decision, I'm going to go with Eli Manning over Tony Romo. Yeah, it's not a no-brainer. It's definitely not a no-brainer. But just judging off of what we saw last year with Eli and the plays that he made last season for the Giants, close to 5,000 yards passing last year. Close to 5,000 yards passing last year. And there's a few who did that. But 29 big touchdowns. But the fourth quarter comebacks were key. They were big, eight of them last year for the Giants. He was money. He was money last year. He was absolutely money last year. Eight fourth quarter comebacks, and including the Super Bowl. including the AFC Championship game. 8 fourth quarter comebacks. You look at that number, and you got to just say, you know what? Eli is the man. Eli is better than Tony Romo at this point. Eli is better than Tony Romo at this point. But we'll see what happens in 2012. Because 2012, it could change some things. It definitely could change some things. Really could. I want to move now to this Penn State scandal. And apparently there's some emails that between the AD at Penn State, a few of the guys at the Penn State who were the administration there at the time, and pretty much Joe Paterno doesn't look good here. At the end of the day, Joe Paterno doesn't look good here. In a lot of ways, what's being said here is that Joe Paterno pretty much may have just tried to cover, not necessarily cover it up, but just try to just get it out the way in some respect. They may have tried to get it out of the way. And so it don't look good for Joe Pa. And God rest his soul, because, I mean, at this point, he is dead and he's really not here to defend himself. He's really not here to defend himself in this situation. He's really not. He's not here to defend himself. He's really not. But the thing about it is, judging by what we saw here in some of these emails, it looked like Curley and Schultz wanted to go to the authorities with what Mike McQuarrie saw in the shower with Jerry Sandusky and that whole thing. But after talking to Joe Paterno, according to some of these emails, they decided against it. They decide against it. And that doesn't look good for Joe Paterno. That doesn't look good for Joe Paterno. That's not a good look for Joe Paterno. It says that in a lot of ways, the organization as a whole tried to cover this up. They tried to cover this up. In a lot of ways, it comes down to, you could argue that the program, the football program, was bigger than innocent kids getting molested. It looks like the program was bigger than anything. Than anything, the program was bigger. So, wow. I mean, it's an unfortunate thing. I mean, and you could still maybe argue that Joe Paterno really didn't know how to handle that type of thing. But obviously when that type of thing comes your way, and a lot of people say, you know, they definitely know how to handle things, but in some respect, does this thing become bigger than Joe Paterno in a lot of ways? It comes to Penn State program. If he blows the whistle on all this, I mean, how does it affect his program? And it's, in some respect, that takes courage to do something like that. It takes courage to want to do something like that. It takes courage. And obviously Joe Paterno did not have the courage to do it. He did not have the courage to do it. He did not have the courage basically to blow the whistle on this whole thing. At least that's what it's looking like now. And all the guys, everybody, Crowley and Schultz, they obviously did not have the courage to blow this thing up. They did not have the courage to blow this up. Tim Curry, Carly, and Gary Schultz did not have the courage to blow this thing up. And ultimately, not having that particular courage may have caused innocent kids to continue to be molested by Jerry Sandusky. No matter how you look at it, it's a sad story. I mean, Joe Paterno, his, you could argue that in some respect, this whole thing may have killed Joe Paterno because he didn't have football any longer. And he always struck me as one of those guys that without football, without that thing, without going to work every day, he really would have nothing to live for. I think in a lot of ways he died of a broken heart. And this whole situation may have killed him. This whole situation probably killed Joe Paterno in a lot of ways. You can make that argument. Sad story, no matter how you look at it, no matter how you slice it. Sad story. Anytime innocent kids are being molested, it's a sad story. Sad, sad story, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Looking at it now, man, I want to go to the NFL, back to the NFL, and this past week, the judge, the jury, and the executioner, Roger Goodell, made his ruling. The appeals by Scott Fujita, Will Smith, Anthony Hargrove, and Jonathan Vilma were upheld. The decision was made by Roger Goodell to uphold his decision. The players will continue to be suspended. That's the bottom line. They will continue to be suspended. And so you look at it now. Are you surprised? Is anybody here shocked? Is anybody here on this earth shocked by what the ruling, by the ruling that came down? I'm not shocked nor surprised. I made the analogy last week. It's basically like this. Little kid gets punished by his daddy for 2 weeks. Day later, little kid goes back to his daddy. You think daddy's going to change the punishment? No. Not at all. Not at all. And to me, if the players want to blame anybody, if they want to blame anybody, they need to look at their union and say, how could you collectively bargain this where Roger Goodell can not only give out fines, suspensions, or what have you, but he is the only person that can, he's the one that hears the appeals. How can you do that? How can you collectively bargain that? How can you do that? Think about it. I'm going to Goodell twice. I'm going to Roger Goodell twice. First for the suspension, the initial suspension, and then the person I appeal it to is Roger Goodell again. How can the union let that happen? So to me, the only people I can blame, the only people I can blame here, if I'm the players, is my union. Because they let me down here. They let me down. They let me down. They let me down. The union let me down. That's who I can blame here. The union. Because, again, by giving Roger Goodell the power to not only give suspensions, fines, and so on and so forth, but you give him the power to hear the appeals. That, my friend, is a judge, a jury, and an executioner. All in one. To me, and looking at that, I don't know how you can let that happen. How can you let that happen? How can you let that happen? How can you give Roger Goodell that kind of power? How? Now you have a situation where some will argue that it's some flimsy evidence. The evidence is so flimsy right now, according to many. Apparently, the audio, you got the NFL Films video of Anthony Hargrove saying, give me the money and all that. And you got Greg Williams talking about the video released about him, talking about it's on me and all the other stuff and so on and so forth. I mean, the thing about it is this. The thing about it is this. I've argued this numerous times on this air, and I will continue to argue this. The league wanted to send messages to everyone else. The message was sent. The message was sent. The message was sent. Sean Payton, gone for a year. Mickey Loomis, general manager, suspended 8 games. Joe Vitt, suspended 6 games. Greg Williams, suspended indefinitely. I don't know. The message was sent. And these players, in a lot of ways, I mean, organization was warned about this, and they continue to do it. So, to me, the people who orchestrated and ran this thing was the organization, was the coaches. And they are part of the organization. The players, in a lot of ways, are doing what the organization is allowing them to do. The organization is allowing them to allegedly have this bounty scheme. They're allowing them to do it. And to me, I look at it... I look at it, and I say, you know, the players are just playing by the rules of what's already in place. They're playing by the rules of what's already in place. And the coaches, the ownership, the Saints were warned. Now, you don't know if this warning went down to the players, but the Saints were warned to cut it out. They didn't do it, allegedly. They didn't do it. But the thing about it is, bounties have been a part of the fabric of the NFL culture for many, 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 many years. For many years. The thing is, they just happen to get caught. But also the thing is, there's a lawsuit, a concussion lawsuit that's out there that could really rock the game of football. So that lawsuit is out there. So who knows what can happen there. And then you have, you know, all the things that's coming down and all the new things we're hearing about head injuries and head traumas and all those things. The league had to do something. Could the league have overreacted? It's a possibility. I mean, I don't particularly have much of a problem with the coaches getting suspended. But I thought it should have stopped there. I don't think the players should have been suspended as well. I don't think the players should have been suspended as well. The coach is fine. Members of the organization, fine. I can understand that. But these players, that I have a problem with. Unfortunate, obviously, very unfortunate situation, no matter how you look at it, and especially for the players. And I'm speaking from a player's perspective. I think it's an unfortunate situation for them. Because they only have X amount of time to make X amount of money. They only have that. And so you're taking away that their earning potential for this season. You're taking that away. And so those guys, that's a tough situation for them. You're taking that away from those guys. And Jonathan Vilma now loses a year worth of salary. He can't get that back. He cannot get that back. Coaches can coach for a long time. Players can't play forever. I just hope. I know players have, players associations trying to do some things in the courts and whatnot, but I just hope these players can do something. Union has sued the NFL on behalf of the players, and you just hope the players can do something. And so, I would think that the collective bargaining agreement between these two, the league and the players, would supersede anything. I would think that would be the case. Because I'm obviously not a lawyer. I don't play one on TV. But I'm saying I think the players' association, they agreed to say, you know what? It is okay for Roger Goodell to not only be the judge, but he can be the jury, and he can be the executioner. The players agreed to that. They agreed to that. You're listening to Go For Them Blog, talkradio.com.
Almeida, a.k.a. Corey Live, host of Pichirica on the Hub and warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And right now, you are listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio with my man Paulie G and Jeremy. Get it!
Thank you, Corey Live, for that live dope drop you gave us. And we're going to bring in now a guy who knows a lot about the sport of golf, the one, the only PGA professional, Rodney Green. Rodney, how are you, sir?
Hey, man, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, man. Thank you for having me.
And Rodney, let's get right down to it. I want to start with Tiger Woods now. He didn't make the cut this weekend, but he has been playing some great, great golf. Three tournament victories this year. Is Tiger Woods back?
It's the topic of conversation, isn't it?
It is.
You know what, man, I'll tell you, I get asked that question a lot, you can well imagine. And I think the question when you say back, you know, back to where he was back in, you know, 2006, 2007, when he was pretty much winning everything, I'm not sure if anyone's ever going to do that again, including himself. But in my estimation, is he back as a dominant player on the tour today? The answer to that is yes. And I think the stat, you know, speak for themselves. I mean, heck, man, he's won three times this year. He's the leading money winner. He's fourth in the world, first in FedEx Cup standings. I mean, what else do you want? I mean, good gracious,
right,
man. So it's hard, man. They just keep beating this guy down for some reason, and he just keeps – I say, you know, depending on how you ask the question and how you phrase it, yeah, man, he's the man. No question.
Is he man enough? Is he the man at this point now? Do you think he will be able to pass Jack in terms of the tournament victories, the major tournament victories? You think he'll catch him?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I think if you look at, he's got three tournament victories this year. Man, look, three tournament victories for some people is a successful career. I mean,
right,
who would play out on tour? Do you play golf, Paul? I meant to ask you that. Do you play?
I do not. I do not. I tried it a couple times, but I don't play it often.
I got to get you out there, man. You got to start
playing. I think you're right.
Everybody you know plays.
That's true. Very true. Very true.
Yeah. Well, so back to the question on Tiger, I think that he's going to surpass Nicklaus's major record. I mean, he already surpassed him in total, overall victories, and I'm sure he'll catch up with, I think it's Sam Snead. It is Sam Snead on overall victories. I mean, you know, I always tell people that if you were to take the top young golfers that they're all trying to put out there as the next Tiger Woods, Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Luke Donald, at 36 years old, when they're 36 years old, you would be able to put together all their victories, and it still won't be 75 victories. I promise you that.
Right.
I promise you that. At all those four together, and they will not win 75 times collectively at 36 years old. Promise you that.
And I think you're dead on with that. I don't see any of those guys combined catching Tiger Woods, and that's a great point. Great point. And you look at Tiger Woods. I want to go back to that Masters victory in 1997. At that point, many thought that particular victory would draw minorities to the sport of golf. Has that done it? Did it do it?
Yeah, I would say that it's drawn minorities, but it's drawn a whole group of mini golfers, man. I see a lot of, you know, I've always seen brothers playing golf. I was fortunate. I was around golf at a young age and always around African-Americans who played golf. But Tiger made golf sexy for everybody. So
right.
Yeah, he drew a lot of minorities into the game of golf, but he made it real sexy for everybody to play golf. So I think with his impact, I would have to go more global for this one on you, Paul, than just to say that he brought in more minorities. Man, everybody's playing golf now, and he made it more worldwide. So it was a global effect of what Tiger Woods actually did.
And looking at it now, Rodney, I mean, you started your own little thing, the Rodney Green Golf, back in 2002. You've had so much success with that endeavor. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, you know, I started that about 12 years ago, and originally I started it just to kind of teach the game of golf to minorities, and then it kind of morphed into an opportunity for me to show the importance of the game of golf from a business perspective. And one of the things that you'll find oftentimes, like I just said to you, I asked you if you play golf, and I said, hey, look, all your buddies play, all your friends play. Man, there are so many opportunities to network on the golf course, and I think that's where a lot of people miss out. And even females, man, I do a lot of classes that are loaded with females, young entrepreneurs and business executives, and remembering to learn how to play the game of golf is going to help them from a business standpoint. I mean, a couple of facts, man. I can tell you about, you know, 90% of all Fortune 500 CEOs play golf. About 25 million U.S. golfers, 25% of them are senior management level people. And, you know, and everybody rates golf as important for business development. I mean, there's no reason why, you know, people who are in business and sales and marketing, you know, wouldn't benefit from playing the game of golf. And that's what my school and that's what my academy and my company teaches. I call it golf, the sport of business.
We're talking to PGA professional Rodney Green. And, Rodney, I mean, with Rodney Green Golf, you work with the who's who, so many celebrities in sports and entertainment, Steve Harvey, Ken Griffey Jr., Condoleezza Rice, to name a few. Talk about those experiences.
You know, and that's, again, like I said, only, you know, because of golf, I've met some of these people, celebrities that you just talked about, because of the game of golf.
Right.
And I'll tell you that the one thing that I find to be true with each one of them is they found out real quick is golf is very humbling. Golf is a very humbling sport. And while they're extremely successful in the line of work that they're in, they found out that it doesn't matter, you know, how much money you make and where you live and who your mama is or who your daddy is. You still have to go out there and put in the work in the game of golf. And so they were very humbled by it. I would say that by far, though, probably – the best client I have from a playing ability standpoint is probably Ken, and Ken, you know, Grippy, he's such an athlete. I mean, and he probably would have been a superstar in anything he would have done, Paul. I tell you, man, just to be around him, he probably, if he'd have played, he could have played in the NFL, he could have played in the NBA, and he could have done whatever probably he wanted to do. So he had that skill set that you know, some of the other athletes and celebs I work with, you know, don't have.
Who's next? I know Ken Griffey is the best, but who's next? Who's number two?
I think that no one has more passion for the game than Steve. And the challenge that Steve Harvey faces is that Steve is so busy. I mean, this guy, my goodness, you know, it's just so hard for Steve. Like, Steve and I will work together for 3 days straight, and Steve is, he's sun up to sundown. I have to shut him down. I have to literally shut him down and say, okay, hold, man, that's enough. I mean, that's enough. And shut him down. But I think, you know, when I think about it, I think he uses it as a retreat oftentimes because he goes so hard, and it's an opportunity for him to just get away. He'll take 3 and 4 day, you know, kind of sabbaticals with me, and we'll work out together. And then, you know, Steve might not be able to touch his clubs again for another 6 months. You know what I mean? That's
right,
how he rolls.
Right.
So that's why I think when he does it, he goes all out. And you know, one characteristic that I find about a lot of successful celebrities and athletes that I find to be true is that, man, these guys only have one gear. That's it. It's just wide open, and that's the way Steve goes. He goes hard, and then he crashes. You know what I mean? He'll fall asleep in the car. You know what I mean? But he goes hard. And Ken is the same way. These guys just have that one, you know, drive, man, that they just go hard all the time. And really, that's what I think makes them so successful, is that they have a gear that I just, some people, you know, I can't get it. I don't know where, you know, how do you get it? I don't know. But so Steve has the most passion out of anyone I work with. And I think, obviously, like I said, Ken is probably one of the most talented that I work with. But I've hung out with Alonzo Mourning, and Alonzo's kind of just starting to play, probably the last 3 years or so since he retired. He's very, very serious about it. And, you know, Alonzo is one of those guys who, again, he's hooked. And Alonzo comes over to see me. In fact, he came over a couple of weeks ago. Alonzo wants to play 36 holes a day. It's 105 degrees outside. I'm like, come on, cuz, let's take a break. And, you know, you know, again, that one gear, wide open, man, sun up to sundown. You know, he plays, you know, all day long. And so he's one of those guys who he's going to get better only because, you know, he's got a lot of time on his hands, and he's got nothing else to do but play golf, you know. So that's what he does.
And the thing about you, Rodney, golf has taken you to many different places. You met many different people because of it. And you had an opportunity to play college basketball, but you chose golf over basketball. Why was that?
Man, look, I got tired of running them suicide drills and running those bleachers all day long. And the other thing in basketball, man, I mean, you know, I'm old, man, you know, so I have to, you know, put myself out there. But, man, bro, I'm 50 years old. And back in the day when I was playing ball, heck, I joke to my little cousins all the time, when I played high school basketball, they didn't even have three-pointers. You know, that's how long, that's how old school I am. We didn't have three-pointers. And unless you're able to be, you know, 6'8" or able to jump 50 inches off the ground, you know, I was, you know, a 5'11", you know, shooting guard. Man, you know, and that was it. I mean, I could shoot, but you know, I just, you know, college basketball would have been good for me, but I'd have never been able to go to the league with it. I knew that. And right. And golf was always my passion because I was exposed to it at a very young age, and I always knew, you know, kind of golf was what I wanted to do. I played basketball because when I played golf as a young kid, golf wasn't the end thing to do. I mean, I graduated from high school in 1980, and back in 1980, heck, I finished second in a state high school golf tournament out of 148 golfers. I was the only African American golfer out of 148, and I ended up going to school with South Carolina State. And we had black golfers on the team. I had never seen another black golfer, never. I didn't even know. I thought I was the best in the world. I'd never seen another one. And so, you know, golf I played as a hobby, and basketball I played so I could get accepted in the neighborhood, you know. So
right.
I couldn't hang out with the fellas playing golf. So I played ball so I could get accepted.
And what's next for Rodney Green Golf? What's next? What's on the horizon there?
Well, you know, the company is in a place now where this sport of business program that I have is reaching out to companies. Like, for instance, I do some events with Wells Fargo, and I travel around to different states, and they do seminars in the morning, and then they do my golf sport of business in the afternoon, and teaches their executives about learning the game of golf. You know, maybe my dream would be to have my own academy, my own golf school, my own golf academy. But right now I'm doing pretty good with just going around and doing different events and exposing people to the game of golf from a business standpoint. So, you know, I don't know if I have a lot of goals with what I want to do with it, but I'm going to let it turn into what it's going to turn into because I'm doing pretty good with it right now.
And you have a birthday. Is it today or coming up?
Last week.
Okay.
I was 50. Man, you know a lot, man. What you been reading up on? Yes, I am. People want to ask me, am I going to try to play the senior tour now that I turned 50? And I joke all the time, and I said, man, look, if I wasn't beating BJ Singh 15 years ago, I ain't about to go out there and start beating him now. I can tell you that. So no, I have no desire to go out there and try to play the senior tour, you know. But
you sure?
Oh, yeah, man. You can't – look, man, those guys out there on that senior tour can flat play.
So, okay.
I there's a lot of guys out here who think that they have the ability to go out there and play with these guys on the senior tour. And it, you know what? if you haven't been able to play with those guys all these years, don't think you can jump out there and start beating them now, because that's all they've been doing for the last 15 years is playing golf. So it's a challenge for the older guys on the PGA Tour now, the guys that are 47, 48, 49 years old. Mm-hmm. They just can't play with those young boys anymore, and they're waiting to turn 50.
So what's going on? Where can we find information about Rodney Green Golf?
On RodneyGreenGolf.com, and I have a Facebook fan page as well at Rodney Green Golf.
And
my email address is Rodney@RodneyGreenGolf.com. So it's just look for some Rodney Green, and I'm easy to find.
And you talked about, you have a lot of women now playing golf. So, fellas, if you want to possibly meet women, maybe you can go out to the links, right?
Oh, man, and ladies, if you want to meet men, go to the links. There's no question about it. No question about it. I do an event for Black Enterprise on Labor Day weekend, and I do a golf school with 80 participants in the golf school, and I bet you out of the 80 participants that easily 90% of them are women. And these are all professional females as well. So it's an excellent opportunity to be able to network and meet and greet on the golf course. No question about
so maybe
it.
But you could...
I got to get you out there. I'm not going to let go until I get you.
Possibly. But maybe you can have a little Rodney Green golf and dating service as well.
E-Harmony.
I tried.
Yeah, you did. I said that one. Yeah, I give you a little cut up. Watch if it takes off, though. Somebody else will take it and run with it. I'm going to tell them that it was your idea. So I'll give you. I'm not like that, man. I won't be one of those kind of brothers, man.
Rodney, one more time. Where can we find information about Rodney Green's golf?
Rodney@RodneyGreenGolf.com is my email, and my website is RodneyGreenGolf.com.
Rodney, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward, and maybe one day I can come out there to the links. Maybe one day.
Hey, thank you for having me, and God bless you, brother.
Take care.
All right, take care.
Rodney Green, PGA professional. And again, he believes that Tiger will surpass Jack. Again, Tiger did surpass Jack in terms of victories on the PGA Tour. So, we'll see. We shall see. Great talking to Rodney Green. And, again, a lot of celebrities out there who play with Rodney, and he's taught them to out there. You got Steve Harvey talked about in terms of his drive and how, Steve won't stop. He will not stop. And I guess maybe that's why he's so successful as he is right now. And a lot of people, he's really trained to go out there and play the sport of golf. And he is right. You got a lot of CEOs. You got a lot of the who's who's, if you will, out there playing the sport of golf. They are playing the sport of golf and loving the sport of golf and enjoying the sport of golf. So shout out to Rodney Green for some of the great things he's doing in the community and with the sport of golf. Another 8 minutes left. Trying to see if we can get Shannon Brown on before we conclude the show. But another few minutes left in the show, and looking at it now, the NBA in terms of free agency, there, like I said, July 11th is the point where signings can be, where all the stuff becomes official. July 11th, everything becomes official. All the things we talked about, all the things we heard about, it will become official on July 11th. And that should be very interesting. That should be very, very interesting to see who actually signs where and who does what. And obviously all the things are going to happen, but you wonder in terms of what's going to happen in terms of those deals getting matched. We talked about Jeremy Lin. The Knicks are more than likely going to match that. But Roy Hibbert, that's an interesting one. Who knows if the Pacers will match that one. And I told them they shouldn't. They would be a fool to do so. They would be a fool to do so. An absolute fool to do so. To match that deal. That wouldn't be wise. That would be just foolish. Absolutely foolish for the Pacers to do that in my mind. But we'll see. We'll see if they match it. We shall see if they match this thing. I don't think they do. I don't think they do. And I think they wouldn't be smart to do so. But we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens there, and I'm very interested to see how the whole situation plays out. looking at it now, and I want to go to baseball now, and I want to look at the Philadelphia Phillies, a team very similar to the Miami Heat in terms of when they got the aces and made all these splashes with the signings, with the you get Holiday, you get Cliff Lee, you have Roy Oswalt and Cole Hamels as well. But the Phillies right now are in the basement in the NL East. This is a team now, Ryan Howard, they brought him back, but many saying that they rushed him back, and really not a good situation, a good move to bring him back right now. Chase Utley, their big-time second baseman, he just came back. But the bottom line is the Phillies are in the basement. 13 games out. And how shocked are we all to hear that? 13 games out of first place at this point of the season. The Phillies, they're struggling. They're flat-out struggling. 11 games under 500. 11 games under 500. It's a tough struggle for the Phillies. 9 games out of the second wild card spot. 9 games out of the second wild card spot. So, needless to say, the Phillies are in some big-time trouble. They are in some big-time trouble right now. Again, 13 back of the Nationals, 9 back in the wild card. I mean, if Ryan Howard is Ryan Howard, if you get Roy Holiday back and he's okay and he can pitch the way Roy Holiday has pitched, Cole Hamels continues his dominance. He's pitched well throughout the course of the season. And you get Cliff Lee right, who got his first victory earlier this week. The Phillies can make a run at it. There's enough talent to make a run, especially with that pitching. The bullpen has been horrible all the way up to Papelbon. Papelbon has done his job. He has 2 blown saves, but for the most part, he has done his job. It's just the guys, the bridge to Papelbon has been a problem. Getting to Jonathan Papelbon has been a problem. So the Phillies are a team that's struggling and struggling mightily. Last night, I mean, it's kind of been a microcosm of their season. I mean, get a big-time pitching performance out of Kyle Kendrick, you turn it over to the bullpen, the Braves explode in that 8th inning, and then ball game, 5-0, Braves beat the Phillies. We'll see. Ryan Howard was 2-for-4 last night. Chase Utley's been playing pretty well. We'll see is it enough for the Phillies to turn this thing around. Can the Phillies turn this thing around? They still have the whole All-Star break. I mean, after the All-Star break, we are past the midpoint of the season. But they have the second half of the season to see what could happen. It's not looking good in Philly, though. Not looking good for the Philadelphia Phillies. 85 games in. 85 games in. So they have 77 games to try to turn this thing around, to right this ship. I don't think they can. I don't know if they will. It just seems like even last 2 nights ago against the Mets, where they had the lead going into the 9th inning, Papelbon blows the save. Just the way it happened and transpired, you get the sense now that the Philadelphia Phillies are done. It's just not their year. And the Phillies, the way they lost that game, it's been the way they've been winning those games during this run since 2007. They have been winning those games that way. But now, the Philadelphia Phillies have been struggling, and I don't think the Phillies will get out of this. I think they're done. I am ready to stick a fork in them. As painful as that may be, the fork has been stuck into the Phillies. I want to thank Rodney Green for stopping by. Make sure you check him out on Twitter at Rodney Green Golf. Got a lot of great things there. You can find all his stuff and all the things that he is doing with Rodney Green Golf. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgant, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. For everybody here at GoForIt, we hope you have a great day, a blessed day, a great week. Hope to see you back here once again. See you later. Take care. Bye.